Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
What's hard to evaluate is a player's character, you know, so how they react on bad days, how they react to adversity. That's the hardest thing to recruit, how competitive they are. That's what we're looking for.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Darnell Harris, assistant coach at Wake Forest University. Coach Harris brings a unique perspective to the game, having played professionally at Middle Tennessee State and overseas in Belgium, China, Greece, and Lebanon before transitioning into coaching. His coaching journey has included stops at Ole Miss and Wake Forest, where he continues to grow within a high-level program and impact player development and recruiting. In this episode, we discuss how his professional playing career shaped his coaching identity, how he approaches the recruiting process while building strong relationships with families, and how he developed his voice as a young coach within a competitive staff environment.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. We're joined alongside a great assistant coach, longtime playing career, ladies and gentlemen, the assistant at Wake Forest University, Darnell Harris. Coach Harris, welcome.
Man, appreciate you for having me, man. Big fan of the show. Very humbled to be on. Gained a lot of knowledge over the years listening to you guys. So I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, man. And want to give a special shout to Tevin Juwan Brown with Dallas Mavericks, who connected us. Shout to Tev. He's been on our pod. He's done a roundtable with us. He's definitely a friend of Rising Coaches. But anyway, yeah, he threw that two-on-one lob to get us connected, man. So appreciate it.
Point guard.
Yeah, that's right. Kept his eyes up. That's right.
I love it. Thanks, Tev. And obviously, Coach Harris, thank you for hopping on here. Some great things to talk about. One, your extensive playing career, as we mentioned. I know that has a lot of information that we can unpackage with that, because obviously being a player, you've been coached by a variety of different people, a variety of different places, different tendencies, going overseas professionally. And then, of course, your young career so far as a coach, what you wear and what you have grown into now, the assistant at Wake Forest. But as I mentioned, you've been around at almost every level. And I know you've talked about, so one thing that we like to do is just look into, and one thing I saw you talked about on a previous interview was like how the game of basketball exposes you to different environments, right? Mm-hmm. That right there, the people, the perspectives throughout your career, just, we're going to start with looking back on your playing career. Okay. How much do you feel did that overseas playing career shape your, what your approach now that, that you use as a coach?
Yeah, great question. I believe going overseas, you kind of have to adapt to different cultures, different environments, different players. Every country is different. Every team is different. So going over there, you have to find a way to fit in. You can't go over there and just sit in your dorm room or sit in your apartment and play the game. If you really want it to work out, you got to get out your comfort zone. You know, so it challenged me. It challenged me to get out, and it was beneficial. I made a lot of great friends over there, played for a lot of good coaches. And it kind of elevated each year, and it proved me a lot as a player throughout my own short career over there. And it really helped me translate into coaching fairly easy, and just met a lot of great people over there.
Yeah. Now, we hear that from a lot of guys that come on and ladies that have been on that played overseas, and just how you got to, Josh Hart said it best after the post game last night when the Knicks won the game two. He was talking about being a servant for his teammates, but he said, he used this phrase, humility got burned out of my heart a long time ago.
Yep.
And I love that, because that's really what's got to happen when you step overseas and start to play. You can average 18 over here and have a great college career, but you get over there and it's a whole different ball game. And if the humility part doesn't get burned out of your heart, it's going to be a struggle, because you've got to, like you said, insert yourself not just in a new team, new style of play, different coach, all that. You got to insert yourself into the culture.
Absolutely.
And you're inserting yourself into a different society altogether. And now you're the foreigner. Sadly, Americans, how we treat people over here, the foreigners don't always get you know, the best treatment, sadly to say. But that's what's humbling about travel in general, and or having to plant yourself overseas for a while. Like now you're the one the green sore thumb sticking out a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to be humble right away. You can get over there because you got to realize these foreign players over there, they're locals. So they've been on that team for maybe 8-9 years. And if you come over with this ego and pride, mm-hmm. it's not going to work out because ultimately they got the last say so. They got right. the with the CEO, the owner, the coaches. So you have to be likable. You have to be likable.
Yeah, for sure.
Man, I to be honest with you, I think about it all the time. I worked at a prep school for a little bit. We had kids from not just basketball, but the whole university or the whole school, I should say. We had 23, 24 different countries represented. I imagine just those kids coming over. Now, that's at a completely different age, younger age, to be able to go to a new country to play and nowhere. You have no idea anything about it. Like, props to you, man, because that's obviously, and I know a lot of people do it, but it's got to be tough. Yeah. The language barrier, I would not be good with. I will say that much. That would be tough. I would struggle.
Yeah. The one thing it does, it exposes a lot of players. If you like the game or if you love it, basketball over there, you won't survive because all the lights and the glamour and the Instagram posts and all the fans, it disappears in a blink of an eye. And if you don't love the game and just fall in love with the process, you're a struggle.
No, I'm glad you said that, man. That happens in coaching too. Guys can get into coaching for what it can give them versus loving it for what it is.
Absolutely.
And there's a big difference between the two. So I'm really glad you said that because, again, that's another form of something that's you kind of – it makes you look yourself in the mirror and say, do I really want to keep this moving?
One of the things I want to say too, like the most humbling, I'm sure, or I don't want to speak for you, but going from a successful player, having this extensive professional career to then going and taking a GA position, that's something that not a lot of people, I'm sure, are willing to do. I was having a conversation with a guy recently, and now granted, it's a little bit different, but he's like, I don't want to leave a full-time job to go be a GA. I'm like, dude, you just graduated a year ago. That's the commitment. Do you really want to do it? Do you really want to get into it? So talk about like the time from going as a player. Was it difficult? Was it weird going to playing career to then being at Ole Miss as a GA?
Yeah, for sure. That's what I always say. It's pros and cons to going overseas and playing basketball if you want to coach. Like I wanted to coach. I realized I wanted to coach during college. And the typical route is to go coach right after you graduate and be a young GA and get started early. But I had the opportunity, was blessed with the opportunity to go play overseas. While you got a chance to play, you got to go play. You only can play for so long.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, yeah, I went over there for 6-7 years, and I came home. I still had that desire to coach, but I also had a family. I had a wife and a daughter and getting ready to have a second daughter. So going to be GA is a hard decision.
You know, that's right.
I tell you this, my last year overseas, I got hurt. It was around COVID. And I came home, and playing overseas, you're really a foreigner at home in America because you come home for 2 months out of the year, and you go over there for 10 months. So Europe comes home. During COVID, we was home for an extended period of time, and I got used to it. I got to see my daughter every day, got to spend more time with my wife. And deep down inside, I was like, I don't know if I want to go back. Like, I think I might be done. So I ended up going back for 1 year, tore my patella tendon, and right then and there, I knew I was done. Because if you ask these players, once you tear that knee up, those numbers start dropping a bit.
Right. You know? That's right. Yeah.
Back home. I started rehabbing at home, spending more time with my family, and really enjoying it. It was a tough time. It was dark, but I found joy in those dark times. I had a bit of perspective. Like I said, I got to see my kids every day, my wife, my parents, who I didn't see often while playing. So I ended up starting a logistics business in Dallas, Texas, delivering medical supplies. I was like, I'm just going to start a business, go that route. And I put a lot of money into it. And I'll tell you this, about 3 months into the career, I called my wife and said, I don't want to do this. I want to die in this van. I want to go. She was on board, man. When I told her, she thought I was joking. She looked at me for a while. But eventually, she was like, okay, this is what you want to do. So I started calling it around. It was about August. So, you know, around that time, you kind of late in the game. Spots are pretty much filled. I started calling my connections. Kermit Davis, who I played for. A lot of coaches who recruited me that I maintained relationships with. Pretty much threw it out there, and they was pretty much full at the time. I kept searching. I just wanted to coach. I was emailing high school coaches. I remember emailing Allen High School down in Dallas. All the time I was blowing this phone up, I was just begging for, can I come be a volunteer? Help you with workouts, clean the floor, whatever you need. He was nice enough to bring me in, and I met with him for about an hour. He fell in love with me. But the next day, he hit me with some hard news and saying the AD wasn't allowing volunteers that year. So it was another no. And I got a lot of no's during that time. But then I ran across a guy named TJ, who's the director and the head coach of Texas Impact on the Under Armour circuit. And he was like, man, I heard your story. I heard you want to coach. Come down to the gym every Sunday. We working kids out, all ages. Come help volunteer. And, man, I was excited. You would think I just got a head coaching job at Northside. So I went down there. I was helping him out, working with all different age groups, learning from him. He was a very elite coach, does a good job. Actually won the Under Armour 17U last year. But, yeah, he gave me the opportunity. And I was working with him for about 4 or 5 months. And then when the circuit started, he came to me like, hey, I want you to coach with me on my 17 under team and be my assistant coach. And that was a blessing in itself. And I think he realized how much I loved the game, how much I enjoyed it. I ain't make a dollar from doing it. I just did it all pure joy. He realized that, and I got the opportunity to work with him. But also, during that time, I was also trying to get in the game. You know what I'm saying? I was still keeping contact with my coaches and all my connections. And I believe it was around beginning of March, maybe, my former coach, Kermit Davis, called me out the blue and said, I got it for you if you want it. And I take some back and say, Coach, hell yeah, I want it. You need me. Less than my wife was excited. Went to Oxford. It was a great journey. And I remember this. I go back to the van situation. I was driving the van all around Dallas, dropping it off. And I was just daydreaming about, like, the vision. I used to see these signs in people's yards, the graduation signs or where they're going.
Oh, yeah.
And I kept seeing Ole Miss bound. And that's where Kermit Davis at. And I said, in my mind, I just know that's where I'm going to end up. It's God telling me that's where I'm going. And it was just a blessing when he called me and gave me the opportunity to go be a GA. Now, my wife really didn't realize what a GA was at the time. So she was on board, and I had to tell her, hey, well, yeah, I got into business, but we won't be getting paid. I might get a stipend. And at the time, I didn't know what that stipend was, but I was willing to take that sacrifice and chance. And luckily, she was willing to do the same. And she was working remote. So that worked out for us as well. So she held it down, you know what I'm saying, did what she can. I did what I can. I actually got a stipend check every month. I tell you, it was probably about $1,300 a month. I didn't even see it. I just handed it and gave it to her. And she did whatever with it. Man, I enjoyed it so much that I almost forgot that I wasn't getting paid. A month would come and 3 months passed. I haven't been paid, but I really haven't realized. And that's, I would say, credit to my wife for holding down everything and making sure we were straight and believing in my vision. But yeah, being a GA when I got in, it was great. It was great, man. A great opportunity.
There's so much to unpack there. Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love it.
No, no doubt, man. Yeah. The thing I love is this revolving door of humility, right? And you keep walking through it. Through this entire pod, it's literally one of my favorite things. And we're only 9-15 minutes into this thing, but humility is literally covered this entire pod, because you go the humility of the overseas journey, right? Then the humility of inserting yourself into a culture over there, then the humility of injury, of just dealing with an injury. That's a lonely deal now. Until your only friends become the friends sometimes that have gone through it, because they're the only ones that can understand it.
Oh, yeah.
Then the humility of getting a bunch of no's, just trying to stay with the search, keep calling. Nope. You get a yes. Yep. And then within 24 hours, you get a no just to be a volunteer. Yep. That sometimes it's tough when volunteers get told no.
Oh, yeah.
Usually it's people that want to be paid to get told no, but when volunteers get told no, you want to talk about testing your mettle right there?
Yes.
But it's so good for what you're saying that coaches need to hear. And that's why we love bringing people on that are going to make our profession better and our game better. And everything you're saying is just so rich for what coaches need to hear. It's really good, man.
Appreciate that.
No, one thing I want to highlight too, and this is some advice that I've given players of mine in the past, and you hit it right on the head. One of the first things you said was, I stayed in touch with coaches or coaches that you recruited you and that you didn't play for. I think that right there is huge, not necessarily for the long haul. You shouldn't be thinking for the long haul. I want to make sure I preface the way I say this. But staying in touch with those people, because a guy who recruited me, I never thought I was going to get into coaching. A guy recruited me I didn't end up going to his school. He was my first job and got me my GA opportunity. That exactly right there. You never know those people who have recruited you, who have kept you in your circle to an extent. They could be the ones to give you your first job. And if you burn a bridge or don't answer that coach or whatever it may be, maybe you don't think you're ever going to get into coaching, but it may spiral up and here you are, right? So
yeah,
it's good to be able to know that and even staying in touch with those other coaches because you never know where they could help you out in the long haul.
Yeah. Now, one thing I noticed, coaches got elite memory. I remember going to a coach that recruited me 20 years ago, and I didn't think he remembered me. I go up, hey, Coach Darnell Harrod, man, I know you, kid from Hawaii. You know what I'm saying? So they don't forget. They remember who they recruit.
The probably the biggest thing that you said on here that young coaches need to hear, and Kermit Davis, by the way, is one of the best people in this business. We may actually try to get him on here at some point because he's got a fantastic journey in his own right. But the best piece of advice you give for young coaches is marry wisely.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best recruiting job you've done up to this point right now is that lady in the house at home. And I say that because, again, if you do choose to get married or guys have fiancés or everybody that listens to us is in maybe a different place as far as that goes, considering marriage, all that. That's a really important deal, man, because you can sell insurance and that's great, but your spouse is independent of that, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. Coaching is like, they're in that thing, man. They feel everything you feel. You can miss out on a few insurance clients and be home at 5:30 and that's not really going to affect the dinner table too much.
Absolutely.
Right?
You're right.
And about so, that. That's why so the fact that I love you giving her a shout out. So hopefully make sure she listens to this so you can let her know, hey, honey, I gave you some props. I'm
send that part out and just send that part to her.
But I'm so glad you said that because it's a partnership, obviously, in itself. But as coaches, man, they've got to be all in because they're really with you as far as this journey. And it's not always pretty.
Yep, absolutely.
And then even going back to you were talking about how the first opportunity you get is coaching with an AAU program too. I feel like a lot of times everybody wants to hit it. And I know I said this on one of our other pods, Al, but like everybody wants to hit that grand slam. Nobody wants to get a single or get on base. You want to get that high major, Wake Forest. I want to get to Wake Forest tomorrow. But you got to start here. You had a professional playing career and you go and be a GA. And obviously Ole Miss is a very prestigious and great school. But like the reason I'm saying it is because so many people that don't have a playing career think that they can just get to the top. And it's not that linear. It's not that easy of a path. So I'm happy you said that. But then kind of talking on the recruiting side of things, Mage mentioned recruiting. Obviously that's in-house recruiting, but on the outside, as a coach going around, recruiting families, being on the road, that's another way to get to connect with other coaches. But then on the flip side of things, players, families, if there's anything that maybe you have learned throughout your coaching career so far on the recruiting aspect, is there something that maybe like players, families don't understand about the recruiting process that you have learned?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm still learning, obviously, as I'm building my young career. This past year was my first year on the road. But one thing I noticed is that, and parents kind of don't realize this as well, is that it's just not skill. There are talented players out there. And there's a reason why we're there watching, because you're talented. That's easy to evaluate. What's hard to evaluate is a player's character, you know, how they react on bad days, how they react to adversity. That's the hardest thing to recruit, how competitive they are. That's what we're looking for. That's what I know what I'm looking for on the sideline, how competitive they are, how many guys they touch on the court, how many teammates they touch, how many hands you clap in, eye contact when your coach is coaching you, little things like that. Are you stretching before a game or are you over there eating popcorn, just pop up and go warm up? Just all those small details that parents kind of are blind to, which I get it. They just wanted their kid to go out there and score 40 points and think they get a full ride scholarship. But it all plays a part. And especially now with the money involved, you got to check a lot of boxes now. As coaches, it's a big investment. So that's one thing I would say. Parents just realize that a lot goes into it than just scoring the basketball or how good you are.
No, I'm glad you said that, man. That's rich in its own right, just because obviously the money adds a different layer to it. But never more than now can we learn lessons from the pro guys in terms of their process, right? The scouting, the intel, the background. the evaluation after the evaluation, right? Yep. How'd you treat your fifth grade principal? Were you always in there?
Yep.
Or did you pass the principal and always saying hello? It's one, there's two reasons you see the principal, right? Yep. What was it? Which reason was it? Right. Were you always in there? Or were you just, hey, Mr. Jones, how you doing? Passing in the hallway. So what was that like? And digging into that. And I touch on this too, because I think one of the biggest biggest lessons parents can learn is how they impact recruiting.
No question.
I think a lot of parents think, hey, my kid's good enough. Like you said, good enough will be enough. And good enough isn't enough. Yeah. How you guys are and how you guys handle things. And what are you putting into your kid's head when adversity happens? And do you let your kid fail? Or are you always trying to fill up every chuck hole before they step in it?
Absolutely.
So talk about that a little bit, because I think parents can miss how much they impact recruiting themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Parents are being heavily recruited. My time here, we missed out on some kids just because we didn't like the parents. And like during the evaluation period, we're looking like, how is this parent reacting to bad plays or when their kid makes a shot or something as simple as where is this parent sitting? Is this parent sitting with all the other parents or is this parent sitting far away by themselves? So a lot of that plays a part and it can determine whether a kid gets a full ride or not. It determines a kid, how much a kid can get better, or you kind of see how that kid is raised. We have kids that are pretty privileged and probably never been yelled at before. And you can tell if the kid been disciplined as a kid right away. So that plays a huge part. I think some parents do realize it and some parents don't. Some parents realizing they can't control themselves. And if the parent can't control themselves, pretty much the kid can't control themselves. That plays a major part. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Especially if I always enjoyed watching parents when their kid got fouled.
Yep.
That one used to fast. That one used
if it's
to
a hard foul.
That, or just a foul or not even a foul at all. And they thought it was like that fascinates me because again, it's wait, you think your kid's that good to not get fouled? And this is a game of physical contact.
Absolutely.
Wait a minute.
When that parent gets fouled, it's the parent yelling, get up. That's what we love to get up.
There you go.
So it can go both ways.
You know? There you go. It can go exactly right. I love that.
Yeah. No, I 100%. There has been a kid we were recruiting. This was a couple of years ago, recruiting a kid. And exactly to your point, his father badmouthed every coach that his son has ever had except for him. He said that his only development has been from me. All the other coaches, they don't really know what they're talking about. You're sitting here talking to coaches. So immediately that kid left, never said another word to him. And he was actually somebody we were really interested in. But to your point. And then the other thing, this is my pet peeve. When I'm recruiting, you go up or you're looking around, you see a kid running down the floor, he makes a mistake, and the first thing he does is he looks up into the rafter, into the stands.
That's the worst right there.
So who's controlling that game at that point?
Yep.
Or if he's playing well, what are they saying? Or he hasn't taken a shot in five possessions.
Yep.
What are they saying? There's so many things. That's why it kind of would blow me away at times. I go to events and guys are on their phones during games. Or guys are just kind of social as coaches now. Guys are just socializing during games. I'm like, there's really a lot going on here that you might be missing out on. I know you kind of want to get through this game and get to the hotel and go get some hot wings with the fellas.
Yeah.
But just put your sociologist hat on here for the next 45 minutes. And you're going to get a lot of information if you just sit here and pay attention.
Yeah. And what I dislike the most is when that player does plays excellent. And after the game, their parents, they sitting in the crowd, they're laughing and having a good time, but we lost. That rubs me away. So,
yeah, especially if they got hammered by 25.
Exactly. The coaches, we're pissed. We don't give a damn about their 25. We lost.
Exactly. So, right.
Everybody shows you the competitive spirit of a player, too. Do they hate winning? Do they love losing or hate winning? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a story right there.
Yeah. I think one thing that kids always appreciate it, especially if it's a kid you've really connected with, is when you tell them things that they did in the game that they didn't think were important, like a phone call that night or maybe the next day after a tournament's over, and you pick out something in the second game of the round robin that they did in the first half that they didn't think it was all significant. But what they did was they rotated over and challenged went verticality on a shot. They sprinted their lane all the way to the corner, missed a wide open three, but got to the right spot, took the right shot, and then sprinted back and then dove on a loose ball, like bang. And to everybody else, those three things aren't that big a deal. But when you go back and tell kids that, especially if it's a kid that you really resonate and really connected, kids always appreciate hearing stuff that you think is important. They didn't think it's that big a deal.
Absolutely. We call it blind stats. Mm. So we love it, but the parents and the people in the audience, they don't see those stats. So absolutely, great point.
Oh, I'm sad, man. I love that phrase.
The blind stats. So what does that encompass? Just like the diving on the loose balls, the extra things that really just don't pop up on the box score?
Absolutely. Diving on a loose ball, rotating to a closeout, like Coach said, sprinting the floor, helping the player on the court that doesn't know the play, those type of things.
Yeah, just the winning intangibles, right? And that's what's always fun about going to the NBA Summer League. And if you're sitting with anybody that you might know that's at that level, those guys tend to sit by themselves, but every now and then you can catch some scouts or sit with some guys. And that's the stuff they talk about, because there's enough talent. Those teams are going to find the talent that they're looking for. Yep. They're looking for that other stuff that contributes to winning that nobody's paying attention to. But no, we could actually do a whole pod series on parents and the AAU tournaments, but that's a different pod for a different day. So we'll keep the main thing right here, which is you.
So I wanted to touch on at some point, because I was actually curious about this. I think you might be the first person, I could be wrong about this, assistant director of player relations. I know that was one of the first positions that you had awake before now stepping into the assistant. But what does that type of position entail, or I guess what are like some of the duties for that type of position?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first got here, Coach Forbes offered me the director of player relation position, and it's an off-court position. And it was challenging for me coming from Ole Miss, because I was on the court a lot as a GA. But when I got here, I was willing to do anything. So it entailed transportation, logistics, helping out with camp. I was in charge of academics, in charge of picking a recruit up from the airport, all the little things, hotel check-in. And of course, I help with a lot of video and film for the coaches. So basically everything besides being on the court with the players, really.
Yeah, it's amazing in those positions. It's a great way to get somebody that you want in the door. And then you figure it out after the fact, right? Let's clean the fish after we catch them type deal. We got the guy in the building now. But what you said there, and I hope, again, coaches at all levels, regardless of gender, you coach men, women, you said in there, when I got here, I was willing to do anything. And that is what, to me, triggers how you can get moving in this profession. Again, there's no hacks. There's no shortcuts. I wear this magic pill hat all the time, just as a silent shot to our profession that we love so much. But it's just a reminder. But I love that you said that, is when I got here, I was willing to do anything.
Yeah.
And that right there, if people embrace that mentality, I'm telling you, that's a big deal. Because then it's a great way for whoever hires you, they're going to watch and see, okay, is he really willing to do anything?
Yeah.
Or
absolutely.
Is it like, this job's too small and no, I'm not doing that. I'm not helping bring bags off the bus. Let the players do that. Let the managers do that.
Yeah.
That's where you get tested. How many times throughout your young, now I know, understand you're still young in the coaching profession, you're still growing and rising in it, but so far, how many times do you feel like you've been tested, or like they've sent you something, or they've asked you a question? And I'm not even talking maybe like where you're at, but just anywhere. People have asked you a question. They knew the answer, right? Mm-hmm. But they wanted to see what you would say. They wanted to see if you would do it. Like, how many times do you feel like you've seen that enough?
Oh, a lot. I would credit Kermit. I asked you to do it. He's going to see if you're going to do it first. He had this quote that always stuck with me. It said, have high antennas. Nothing should never surprise you. So when that plane landed, I make sure I had two bags in my hands. All little stuff. When we have a visit in the morning, I'm in bed twisting and turning. I got to make sure this gym is clean. I got to make sure everything is organized. Just being alert. And also, like you said, be willing to do little things, but also have pride in doing it. Make sure you do it right. Do it half-assed and make sure these guys and the coaches know that you take your job very seriously.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's how you move up. If you want to move up in this business, just do your job well. Do your job when you're supposed to do it and do it well.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, those little things, man, like I highlight this thing, but just help unload the bus. Like the managers and GAs are down there kind of hustling, pulling. Jump in there. Mm-hmm. Jump in there. Get a bag set by the sidewalk. You'll get your hotel room key.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got your room. Nobody's going to take your room. Like, it's not, you know, just, that's a big thing, though. I say that because that's a big deal. Just jump in and letting them young hustlers know, hey, man, I can. It's okay. Like, I'm here to help you guys, too. This is about a team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still, as an assistant coach, I still go down under that bus to get my hands dirty.
No doubt.
I never want somebody to say, oh, Darnell think he made it. No, I still get down to dirty.
Absolutely, man. I love it.
I asked that too, because I feel like the amount of times where that's one thing that as a young coach, you don't necessarily know you're like it's happening. Head coaches, other people ahead of you, assistant coaches, whatever. Like when I was first starting in the industry, looking back on it, I didn't realize. But then you start to notice they'll always ask you questions. They'll always send you something like, hey, or problems will always occur, right? Somebody will always say, man, I really wish we could do this. Do it. Go find. Don't even say, hey, coach, let me go figure that out for you. Go figure it out and come back, bring it to him and say, hey, this is exactly what I came up with. And he's, oh, I didn't. There's a prime example there for anybody listening. Yep. They'll be even more like, wow, okay. I didn't. Yep. You were actually paying attention. Yep. But if you go and get a small task, knock it out, another one's going to come, and then another one. And then ultimately you grow from a GA to now being an assistant coach and in the long haul, not in a day. I want to make sure to preface by saying it, not in a day, in the long haul, but
it's all about being proactive and not reactive.
Yes. One thing,
never look for a pat on the back. Just do the job because it's your job. Look for a good job or keep up the good work. Just do your job well and the reward will come eventually.
Yeah, it's like the player that gets to a Friday and he makes a big deal about not missing class all week. Hold up, man.
It's your job.
Yeah, what are we talking about here? Now, if you get a 3.75, that's a different conversation. And we'll buy you a cake, right?
yeah.
But just doing the supposed tos.
That what it takes? 3.75 for a cake? Man.
Hey, you got to throw something in there. We used to buy extra gear. I used to buy extra gear when I was at Charlotte, and that was like our incentive program. You get on a test, then we'd have a t-shirt or a pair of socks or some shorts. Or we just had extra gear piled up. So it kind of became an incentive thing. So dudes were hustling to get some grades at that point. But I think the lesson that we can learn for ourselves is the lessons that we try to give away. And what are we always telling players about? Constantly, we tell them, be consistent, right?
Yep.
Obviously, have the right approach, but be consistent. Have a great day. Stack great days. Mm. Be obsessed with your own development. It's like, what's that Japanese phrase? Kaizen. They say Kaizen, which is small increments.
Yep. Just
keep getting better. We say that to players all the time. It's the very thing we need to say to ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So there's player development, but there's coach development too. That's as important because coach development is just going to enhance player development in the end. Everything we're going to do is going to trickle down to them anyway. They're going to be the ultimate benefactors of our growth.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to get better as a coach. I remember a pod and you said this, you said, add a layer to your game. And that goes for coaches too. Get in the lab and work on your game. Work on your communication skills. Work relationship building, all those things. Bring something new to the table the following year. I think players notice it too. Players know when a coach is fully invested. And you
no
in
question.
In the program, man, you're able to coach them a little better because they know that you care.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, I still, on occasional timeouts during these playoff games, I'll stand up and I'll get my little pad and I'll be like, all right, if I needed a bucket in this situation, in that game right now, what would I do? And I'll scribble something down. It may looks a little bit like chicken scratch, but I'll scribble something down to say, okay, right now, like Karl-Anthony Towns needs a shot. What would I do to get him the ball? And then I try to get it, everything organized and laid out before the commercial's over with. And that's my way of kind of like challenging myself. And then actually I'm literally standing in my living room talking to myself as I'm scribbling this out. All right, you're going to be here. All right, you're going to set the screen, but you're not really going to set it. You're going to actually slip it so you can get to. Mm-hmm. So, but we have to be obsessed with our own development the same way we demand it from players. Are we demanding of ourselves what we demand from players. That's a big deal.
No, no question. That's a great point. But coach, what one thing that we'll do is we'll jump into what the we call the hot seat segment. Okay. Seat gets a little warm, turn it up a little bit. All really is just some easy basic questions, some quick hitters.
We don't know anything you guys don't know at Wake, so you're in good shape. So that's not the hot seat we're talking about. So
all right. So what it is just a couple quick hitters and just answer them what you feel. But the number one thing that you feel basketball players, actual players, a skill that they overlook?
I would say, I won't call this a skill, but I would say watching film. A lot of players think player development is just getting on the court, shooting a whole bunch of shots and doing a whole bunch of dribble moves, but player development comes in many different forms. Film, the weight room, watching basketball, NBA at night, talking basketball. There's many ways to get better as a player. And I think the good players, they do everything. We had a player a couple years ago, this one I was a player relations guy, and I was doing room checks. And I was going to all the rooms, checking rooms, and you know what I'm saying, players on the bed watching TikTok, players on the bed talking to the girlfriend. And our best player on the team, I got to his room last, and he had his phone propped up on his desk, and he watching some late night ACC game, some random ACC game. He just watching basketball. That kind of tells the story why he's the best player, because he put in the time, not only on the court, but off the court.
Yeah. No, that's big time. Yeah.
Film is so overlooked. It is. Or maybe it's one of those things where you can see, it's hard to know what to look for if you don't know. If you have a coach sitting next to you and be able to break it down with you, yeah, that's maybe a little bit easier to point out, hey, this is your footwork. This is what you did. We see this situation. You see the way this defender acted when you took this dribble. I like that a lot. That's a great answer. Yeah. But then on the flip side of things, okay, that's for a player. For a coach, what is one skill that you feel young coaches getting in the industry, this is what they should look to improve on early?
I would say communication skills, finding their voice, and being around the coaches more. As a young coach, anytime I hear our coaches talking ball and I'm in the office, I run in there. I just want to be a fly on the wall, just soak it all up, because we have a great coaching staff. Matt Woodley, BJ Mackey, Jason Shea, they know ball. And as a young coach, you want to learn from the best. And I'll tell you this, as a GA, the best thing Kermit Davis did for me was allow me to be in the staff meetings. Because at the first month, I wasn't in there. And he'll see me just walking around without having a staff meeting. And he seen me, I was curious. So he said, I want you to every staff meeting from now on. I never said a word that whole year in the staff meeting, but I gained a lot of knowledge. And it really helped me transition here at Wake Forest. And when I got here, I was still that fly on the wall. And I'm starting to find my voice more early. Coach Forbes is giving me that trust and demanding me to speak up more and have that voice in meetings on the court. So, yeah, just finding your voice as a coach. Talk more. When you got recruits in town, find a parent, find a dad to talk to on the side. Speak on campus. Speak to your AD and the women's coach, the football assistant coaches. Just have a voice on campus and use it.
Yeah, I love that, because you actually talk about having two voices, right? Your own voice within your own building, mm-hmm. and within your own coaching staff, developing that voice and the voice on the floor with the players and saying things with conviction and yep. knowing how to change volume and all that stuff. But you said a big thing for young coaches. That's really important, is getting out on your campus and engaging with people.
Yeah.
Especially when you're within your own department, right? Saying hello to the other associate ADs and who will eventually become ADs,
yep.
by the way. Wink, wink, young coaches. Your associates are going to be ADs at some point, so getting to know them. But getting out on campus, man, and that sends a message about Coach Forbes' program. Oh, yeah. It's like they'll never say Darnell Harris was over here in housing today chatting it up with people. They'll say one of the men's basketball assistants was over here.
Yep.
So now you become a representation of your entire building. And so that's a big deal. And Dougie knows that D3 is no getting away from it. Everybody on campus knows you. So you can't.
Yeah, I had a conversation, especially when, Darnell, I know you're a bigger guy, right? Like, I'm 6'8 myself. We stand out like sore thumbs, okay? So the other day, I'm not kidding with you. Somebody walks into the office. They're like, wait a minute. Hey, I remember you. And I'm like, remember me. Hey, you're one of the basketball coaches. You work in the advancement office. I'm like, how do you know that? Oh, because you're 6'8". You stand out like a sore thumb. Like, that's, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but exactly to your point, your reputation, it lingers.
Yo, the taller you are, the nicer you better be. That's for sure, because the folks are going to remember. Folks are going to remember for sure. We all need to be nice, but the taller you are, that quickens their memory for sure, because whatever you do or say, they're going to remember, because they're like, oh, yeah, that big dude, yeah. Oh, what a nice guy. He's like a teddy bear.
So. Darnell, I want to call an Omaha because I had one final question, but we're going to call a Peyton Manning Omaha. I'm going to switch it up because I actually liked exactly what you said. You talked about finding your voice as a young coach, so now I'm kind of going to ask on that. How do you find your voice as a young coach? I know you covered it a little bit, but I feel like that's one thing that a lot of young people struggle with is when should I talk and how can I talk and communicate, especially and bring information when you're in, you mentioned the staff meetings or being on the court. Just for you, how have you feel that you found your voice?
Yeah, great question. I think first you need to become an elite listener before you start speaking. So like I said, I was a fly on the wall for a good 2 years. Just learning how to pay attention to other coaches when they speak, how they speak up. And obviously, you got to know your stuff when you do speak. You don't want to be that guy just to talk in the meeting just to hear your own voice or trying to sound smart. But when you speak, you want to bring some type of value to the meeting. And I've gotten better. It's hard. It's hard to pick your poison on when to speak up or not. But also having that confidence, in your voice and knowing that you put in the work and know what you're talking about. I think the coaches see that, and the more you speak up, the more the coaches will allow you to.
Yeah. Said, man. That's huge. I couldn't say it any better.
Yeah. No, 100%. Listening is one of the, and it's funny because listening is one of the most underrated skills, but we also said in the early on, communication is one of the skills. So it's, but you got to find a way to be able to balance both of those. And if you figure that out, that's when leaps get made. Yeah. That's great advice. No, great advice.
No question.
Darnell, first off, we want to thank you again for taking some time, obviously being on here, being able to share with people, as well as just getting to hear your story and getting to meet you from our perspective. It's been great. Excited. Like we said, I know you're a young coach in the industry. So of course there's a lot of growth and a lot of opportunity moving forward, but as we always say, enjoy where you're at, and excited for you to be able to hop on with us.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate the time. I really enjoyed it. I wish we can go longer, but man, I keep pumping out them podcasts and I'm tuning in.
No, we appreciate you, man. I hope what people pull from you is the two H's. And even at your early stage of your career, that's going to travel with you, and it's going to keep you in this game a long time. And that's the reason why I'm saying it, is you have great humility. It's jumped off the screen, and you understand the honor of doing what we do, the opportunity to do what we do. It's an honor. And sometimes young coaches, if things happen fast for them and they don't really have any, they don't have to throw a lot of punches to get into the business, they can miss that.
Yeah.
You had to be damn near Ali, Sonny Liston, George Foreman, and Frazier to get into this business. Right. That's how many punches you threw.
Yeah.
But when you've had to throw some punches, then there's an appreciation when you actually do land a couple. And so you understand it's an honor to do what we do. And I hope young coaches, or if you've been coaching for 30 years and you maybe haven't had any gap time or anything, and you've just been able to keep it moving for a long period of time, I hope they don't miss on that either, that it's an extreme honor to do what we do. And that should never be taken for granted. We appreciate you, man. This was awesome.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
No, no doubt. No doubt. Said Mage. Mage always got the great. He's always got the great one-liners. I know you mentioned something. He always does. But
Every time.
I learned so much from this guy. It's amazing. But also, like I said, thanks for hopping on here. And thank you all for tuning in to another episode, The Rising Coaches Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, your hosts, Doug Caputo, Alan Major. You coaches, keep working. Keep rising. Use those two H's. That's how you'll get your way up. Take care, everybody. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.
coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.